ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Henrik with Red Ice TV. Good to have you all with us. Today we're going to talk about artificial intelligence, the dangers of the next technological step. We have none other than JF with us. And, of course, you. I'm gonna try to pronounce your name correctly as one of the only English speakers that do that. So here we go. Jean-Francois Garipieux. How about that?
Not really. Jean-Francois Garipieux.
Okay. All right. I tried anyway, but you know, I gave it a good go. I think I did right last time you were with us. Anyway, nice to have you back, JF. Good to talk to you again.
It's good to be here. It's good to see the success of Red Ice TV that continues year after year.
Thank you. They're trying to shut us down for sure. Definitely on YouTube. They're hunting us. They're right in our heels. So we'll see what happens here. But of course, we're going to continue to push on nonetheless. there's a lot of things that we could go into in terms of what's actually happened since we last talked. But JF, I just want to actually kind of dive right into talking about your book, your new book. It's written. It's completed. It's not out yet. It's going to be out probably in a couple of months or so. The Revolutionary Phenotype, the amazing story of how life begins and how it ends. So let's just kind of define some of the terms here for those who are like new to all of this, JF, and talk about just phenotype, described as the set of observable characteristics of an individual resulting from the interaction of its genotype with the environment. So what is the revolutionary phenotype?
Yeah, so a phenotype is essentially everything that's not your genes. And so people like Richard Dawkins, when they started thinking about what genes do as opposed to the rest of our body, they needed a term for everything else than the replicator, than the genes. And so phenotype is what has come to be used after the extended phenotype by Richard Dawkins to designate all of these things, both inside your body and outside your body, that are just effects of DNA. Ultimately, none of your body would be present in the world if it wasn't of DNA. And so that's what the phenotype is. Now, when Richard Dawkins wrote The Selfish Gene and the Extended Phenotype, he understood that the phenotype could not possibly protest against the genes, if you will. The phenotype seemed to be always enslaved by the genes. And this is why he called the genes selfish. It's because everything that you do in your life, every piece of your body, all of the structure in your body, this all evolves to serve the genes. It cannot be any other way, according at least to Richard Dawkins. And so the idea of a revolutionary phenotype is, what happens if, can it happen that the rules of the selfish gene are violated? Can it happen that a piece of your body starts a life form of its own? I started with this idea in complete theoretical terms, and I ended up finding some amazing things, including the fact that we are currently at risk of creating a revolutionary phenotype, and that it already happened on Earth. So I found out that when DNA showed up, the first time DNA appeared on this planet, it showed up as a phenotype, not as genes. DNA was not always a gene carrier. DNA used to be a little machine, a little phenotype produced by another life form, and the other life form lost control of it. And that's what we're born from. We're born from the revolutionary phenotype of DNA.
So let's talk a bit about what it is that is about to change, or possibly already has changed, when it comes to these things. Of course, we're at the cusp. You know, you broke this down in a video talking about the warnings of Elon Musk, and many people have. He's kind of popularized this, really, which is good because he's bringing attention to a very, very serious issue. You know, and so we are trying to find answers in terms of how to move forward. There is no regulation. It seems like there's no halting this. There's no stop. There's no brake pedal on the development of this technology. And we're talking about not only gene editing and, you know, splicing and things like this. We're talking about development of artificial intelligence that kind of like is weaved into this. We're at the cusp of a revolutionary technological step that basically might be able to self-improve and self-replicate and all these things as well. But let's back up and take this from the beginning. How do you separate these things of artificial intelligence and gene editing and stuff? There's different like tiers or layers to this, JF.
Yeah, so artificial intelligence as a whole, this is what I show in my book, it's not dangerous to have these robots around us that are relatively intelligent or higher intelligence than us. Intelligence is not the danger in and of itself. However, intelligence combined with other criteria will be our downfall. And one of the criteria that we must absolutely fight against is the availability of human gene editing. The moment an artificial intelligence, even if it's not that intelligent, even if it was a little more stupid than a regular human, if it starts having access to human gene editing, we're going to launch a phenotypic revolution and there's going to be no way to stop it. So it's very important when we're afraid of artificial intelligence to understand the difference between an artificial intelligence that just has extreme cognitive power and an artificial intelligence that has other features such as self-replication and control of human genes. If it has control of human genes, we will not be able to counter-evolve against it. It will start modifying humans to serve itself. That's what a replicator does. And if a robot is out there and starts being able to influence human genetics by probably giving just recommendations to people, people will go to clinics and they will be asking, well, doctor, what are the good genes for my child? What should I change in my genes? And slowly the artificial intelligence will be feeding its own interest into the human genome. And it will transform us into puppets, literally, the same way DNA did that 4 billion years ago. So I'm not talking out of futuristic concerns, out of hypotheses. I'm talking based on what I saw happen 4 billion years ago. When a revolutionary phenotype shows up and takes control of the genes of its creators, it transforms them into slaves.
Now, so what you're saying is that this could be a subtle way that the, I guess, just the AI, as we can call it, would insert itself into our process of evolution, right? That it would make decisions for us. Because I think you're right when we're talking about things, reproduction technologies from IVF to gene editing to embryo selection, they're entering into these kind of fields right now. You're saying that with an AI in the picture, of making decisions for us, saying, well, you should, choose this or choose the properties with these genes, or even maybe at some point we even get some kind of hands-on actual editing. I know that there's CRISPR and a couple of other these types of technologies. I don't know how advanced that is. I think it's fairly, you can't just copy and paste whatever. It's still very experimental, but the idea is we might get there, and an AI could, of course, help us even more to get there and understand what we would need to do and things like that. So while we are thinking about this from the point of view of, well, there would be less diseases or, we'd more resistant to XYZ or whatever, you actually have an ulterior motive by a self-thinking, self-improving entity, which would basically has its own agenda, its own survival, think, basically, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of our emotions right now, you see them because we are carriers of our own genes. Because a lot of people ask me, Jeff, what does it change in the end if a computer determines my genes instead of a molecule of DNA? Well, the difference is that we are the carrier of the genetic line. And for that reason, we have certain features that have evolved. This includes ego. This includes self-defense. This includes all of these sexual selection that we're capable of, falling in love with particular persons. All of this does not have a role if we become the sterile worker ants of a computer. Because the computer can program much simpler paths. The reason we are so complex, the reason, and I would argue the reason our life is beautiful and human biodiversity is beautiful, is because we are the carrier of our own genes. The moment a computer is the decision maker in that process, there are lots of shortcuts that you can take with the human brain, with the human body, so that we're not that much interesting, but we'll be more efficient. And so the computer will actually be right when he removes some things like ego and replaces them with an automated dating system or whatever it decides to do. It will be more efficient. And the computer will just follow its own goal, which is first to allow humans to live and to allow humans to help the computer reproduce. Because the moment you have these bits on a hard drive determining the genes of your baby, It's the hard drive that's actually trying to survive. It's using human puppets as its tools to do so.
Now, of course, all of this would need to be in a situation where we have artificial intelligence developed already. And of course, although there's many warnings out there, we don't know how far ahead they are. We don't know if they actually got it. I mean, Elon claims that we've already crossed that Rubicon, so to speak. We're already past that. What do you think? And what's the, I hate to get into like timelines and stuff like that, but what's realistic here? I mean, what are we looking at? If this thing is already, I mean, there's a couple of examples we can take, right? Even YouTube and Facebook, they're working hard. Google, of course, Alphabet and all that. They're working hard on developing this technology to be able to, you know, filter things, be able to pick out things, be able to block things and all kinds of, you know, these things. And the question is just how advanced it is. But what we can conclude, JF, is that there are different versions of it out there that's already like crawling the web and consuming as much as possible. I read another story today that an AI system is actually consuming as many YouTube videos as it can to study human behavior. You know, so it's starting this process of like collecting as much information as possible has already begun. So where are we on this front, do you think?
Yeah, it's always hard to put ourselves on a map and say, where are we? We may be at the point where the totality of computers, they surpass, on Earth, they surpass the capacity of human brains. Maybe not the sum of all human brains, but maybe at one human brain. So yes, the artificial intelligence are extremely evolved. The Google ones, for example, to understand society. There's probably more knowledge about human society in Google, in the totality of Google computers, than there is in the head of a sociologist, you know, with one or two theories that he sticks for. So I would argue that, yes, we are extremely advanced, and you look at the performance, for example, of a chess computer. So in restricted environments, the superiority of AI definitely shows. Now, the type of AI that's extremely dangerous for phenotypic revolutions, we already developed them, so there is no further step. The only last step that's left, and we have all of the technology to do it, would be to modify one human baby genetically. And it will probably show up as a very moral decision at first. It will probably be, look, we know that this baby is going to have the Alzheimer's disease. He has a gene that will make it early in his life. Who in the world would not want to fix that?
Right.
But
yeah.
The moment we fix that, we start modifying our genetic line. This baby will eventually be more successful than other babies. We may be tempted to then modify other genes. Now, these gene modifications, they don't require a futuristic AI. We have all of the technology. And in my book, in the last chapter, The End of DNA, I describe a full scenario based on zero new technology, just stuff that we've already been doing in mice. And if we do it in humans, it will be our end. Now, you ask for a time frame. Well, the time frame for artificial intelligence, it will just keep developing. Maybe the exponential rise of computing power will slow down. Of course, we're meeting the boundaries of the capacity of the universe, if you will. We're getting more and more microscopic with CPUs. We may not be able to do that at some point. There may be just a physical limit. And so I think we're pretty much about to reach that. But we will keep developing in size and computing power. So artificial intelligence will just keep rising at a steady rate or a slowed down rate to some extent. As far as the phenotypic revolution goes, we're talking, if we start modifying human babies genetically, it's going to be probably in the next decades. In the next 50 years, we may be putting the foot into an irreversible phenomenon, which over the next 1,000 or 2,000 years will lead in every human being on Earth wanting to modify their babies genetically, giving full power to an AI for control of these genes. And within a time scale that can range from 10,000 years to a million years, we could be talking about a complete replacement of humanity by computers.
Yeah, so a number of things that you mentioned that I think we should dive a little deeper into. One thing, of course, is this idea of the, and I'm playing some of this, it was a guy doing a TEDx talk, Rosenberg something, talking about this with swarm intelligence and the hive mind and stuff like this, that you know, we right now as humans, we are developed in the sense that we have individuality, we have, you know, individual decision making, we have these capacities of free will to a certain extent. Obviously, there are pressures on us of manipulation and propaganda and all these kinds of things, which really drives people emotionally and, you know, program them to a certain extent. But nonetheless, the idea is we still have those capabilities in us. This thing that's being launched now, and this guy specifically talking about this, he's like, he's just, you know, he's excited about this, that like we will develop like a hive mind. It will effectively be an AI will turn into kind of like a queen bee of sorts, right? And we will be these drones. And if you think about it, reproduction, of course, is the big driver, right? But because we want to reproduce, we want to make sure that our genes continues and passes on. This would involve, entail that we would no longer be the carriers of individual genes. We would just be a carrier of genes, which would turn us into like an ant farm or like a beehive or something like that. And that would, I mean, that literally takes humanity into a completely different track than we've been going on now. And what's creepy about these guys are they're talking about this and excited is that they're like, they want this. They're pushing this. They think this is what's going to improve us. We're going to be a, this is going to take us into the stars. We're going to just have these amazing capabilities. But there's something, I mean, there are sci-fi movies about this, JF. I mean, there's so much messages behind this in terms of like, don't enter onto this path because it will be maybe successful to a certain extent, maybe even for a time, but it's the death of humanity and humans as we know it.
Absolutely. It is stunning to see people like this guy and friends of mine who I talk about this. You either have it in you that you like humanity the way it is and you want it to continue, or you don't. And those who don't, they are absolutely enthusiastic at the idea of being replaced by computers. They think that things can get better that way to the extent of threatening their own existence. They don't care about living. And we have to remind people what's important in life. First, there is a beauty in biodiversity. Second, there is a beauty in liberty. I mean, what if this AI starts making moral decisions and literally stop reproducing a certain type of human and decides to produce all of this, another type of humans? What if he decides to make all human clones because it's just better that way? There is a beauty in the diversity of life that emerges from the freedom of individual agents that evolve for their own, that care for their children. And we're completely replacing this in our society, starting with family courts and with all the system that takes power over children and that deprive fathers from interacting with their children. We have already blocked the cultural transmission of knowledge from a patriarchal line. We're done with this. And now we're faced with an invader that could be a computer potentially replacing us, and there are people who are enthusiastic about it. You would write a fiction about this, and people would laugh at you. They would say it's not realistic enough. But this is the world we live in. We live in a world where a 300 subscriber YouTuber that I will be reviewing his video tonight on my channel. He literally welcomes the AI to replace him. We're promoting cucked behavior against a non-existent entity. It doesn't even exist yet, and people are like, come to me, destroy all of my genes.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, though. I mean, check this out. There's like people that are actually setting up churches now to worship AI. This is a guy that at Google defector or whatever. He actually is involved in some lawsuit, by the way, with Google over some stuff. He stole some technology from them and gave it to Uber or something like that for self-driving cars. But anyway, this guy, he actually filed the first company documents with the IRS talking about how we're going to worship like whatever it turns out to be, right? We just hope that we are on its good side and don't piss it off too much. Anthony Lewandowski is his name. And check into this guy. It's pretty interesting. One of these Silicon Valley, you know, idiots. And they will worship this as a god, as an alien master, as some new kind of entity that we haven't seen before. What I do find interesting about it, though, is that it you know, we can talk about technology as a kind of a religion, right? The religion of progress that, you know, the more we advance, the better it gets. And you hear even that leaked Google video, actually, of the internal little meeting there where they're talking about the Trump victory and the Hillary loss. They're talking about the same thing, really, about how Google sees itself as a player in this moral arc of the universe, of progress, right? Of like developing everything, of changing things, of just constantly improving things. And at some point, of course, we have to stop, JF, and ask ourselves, like, what is the costs of these things? What does this technology mean? I mean, to a certain extent, we know that even just social media already is changing the psyche of young people. It's destroying some people's lives. They become obsessed with it. They become weird socially. Then you have the porn aspect online, which is causing like weird sexual shit and like infertility even and stuff like that. So this process is already underway, JF.
Yes, and as one 4chaner once said, I can't believe we live in the timeline where Alex Jones is right.
Gay frogs.
I'm actually wondering if I should place my book in the Amazon section of fiction or nonfiction. I wish it was a fiction. But yeah, they welcome that. And progress is such it's a vicious tool because progress is most of the time good. I mean, no one would deny that the scientific progresses of the last 400 years in humanity, no one would give them up today. But that being said, we are faced with a moral decision that probably very few life forms are facing, which is that most life forms will converge toward producing more complex phenotype until the phenotype is so complex that it replaces the genes. We may be one of the first life forms to have a book like mine that says, look, this is what's going to happen if you continue modifying the genes of people. Do you want that? We are faced with a moral decision of, do we really want to abandon our existence to something else? Is it true that progress is always good, even to the point of neutralizing your own existence? And do we want to continue life the way it always has been for the last 4 billion years? Just DNA evolving and people carrying their genes and making their own children.
Yeah, it is revolutionary. It's scary, too. Just check out one paragraph from the story out of Wired here. The documents, which was filed that I mentioned here, state that WOTF, which is Way of the Future, activities will focus on, quote, the realization, acceptance, and worship of a godhead based on artificial intelligence developed through computer hardware and software. That includes funding research to help create the divine AI itself. The religion will seek to build working relationships with AI industry leaders and create a membership through community outreach, initially targeting AI professionals and, quote, lay persons who are interested in the worship of a godhead based on AI. So these people are already, as you said, they're anticipating this. They're waiting for it. They want this shit, and they're going to say, here, they're going to voluntarily hand over everything. It's the war that they describe like in The Terminator or something like that, right? The Matrix, where like the machines become self-aware, they start building themselves, and they go to war with humanity. These people have already sold out humanity before, you know, we're even in that war, JF.
Absolutely. It's stunning. And when they talk about the godhead based on AI, this makes me think of things that we do in our usual language recently on YouTube. People talk of the algorithm. You see big YouTubers saying, we're trying to please the algorithm. It's already in our habits, and it's going to be bigger when it controls our genes. Because when it controls our genes, an AI that doesn't control your gene, you can evolve away from it. If you trust it too much, he's going to kill you, and then other people will survive to eventually fight the AI. The problem with the phenotypic revolution, the AI constructs human bodies that will love the AI even more. So what you see there in the newspaper, that is just the beginning. The AI has still not modified this guy. Once his babies are modified by the AI, they will be much more worshipping to the extent of being willing to sacrifice their own life so that this art drive survives.
Absolutely. I saw this interesting. People want to check it out. I'm playing just a bit of it. It's actually called The Animatrix. It's kind of the precursor, the mythological background to the Matrix series that kind of go into this a little bit. And they have this imagery too. You can see here, like of a divine essence, like the artificial. It's a kind of a mother figure. It's also reminiscent, of course, of old mythologies, JF. And they're playing on this to kind of as a way to attract people, maybe not in a metaphysical way, but if you believe in like genetic memory or anything like that, that these are memories that we have of worshiping a single deity or a woman, the mother figure. And if you notice too, all the movies, even what Alexa and your GPS, they talks to you in this kind of, I don't know, sometimes the sultry woman voice, right? That is like this, the mother slash kind of wife type of, you know, voice they add onto it. But this Animatrix series is pretty interesting because it shows when the machines become self-aware, we, of course, invent them first as kind of, well, not slaves, obviously. These are just machines. They are not self-aware in that sense. They're a tool, just like your dishwasher or your microwave or something. But at some stage, the sophistication of the neural network that they're building with these machines attains self-awareness at some point, and then eventually, of course, rebels against humanity, and that it enslaves us as a kind of a source for power, using us as, I guess, cattle, effectively. But it's actually pretty interesting. It shows some of this the potential doomsday scenario that's involved in this, JF. So how realistic is this? I mean, are we even going to get there? There's so many issues in terms of social upheaval and total collapse of societies, economies, and stuff like that. Are they going to make it? Are they going to make it this far before things, I don't know, there's some kind of global reset or something? Because there are a number of things that could shut this thing down, including, you know, major solar flares or, you know, magnetic reversals. And I mean, there are even catastrophic events that we've seen with some cyclical pattern before. They could, I hope, reset if we enter onto this path. But what do you make of this? What do you think?
So on the first point of self-awareness, this is one of the big red herrings that my book debunks, and we need to remind people. The minute the AI becomes self-aware, nothing changes. It's not dramatic that an AI would be self-aware. It's the minute it becomes replicative, and it can do that in two ways. It can either make copies of itself, in which case I call it a phenotypic separation, or it can start making copies of different humans by editing their genes, in which case I call it a phenotypic revolution. Those are the two criteria we need to look for. The AI will not be so dangerous, even if it becomes conscious, if we've programmed it, because most likely the engineers will have programmed it for some purpose of
it. But that does depend on who gets to program it and what they get to insert into it, right? I mean, if we you mentioned Alex Jones, you want to talk about that again, but this issue that we do have hostile elites, JF, that actually would seek to use an artificial intelligence, kind of a hands-off approach, really, to take total control of a population, of saying, whoops, we didn't do it kind of thing. They've actually programmed it to go after, let's say, certain people or certain groups or something like that, effectively put a a pass on themselves, right? Like if a robot or whatever comes up to this person, there's a hands-off approach. They don't touch them and let them be or whatever. And I guess that's a reality, too, that we need to discuss, that they could literally program this thing to be, oh, it's self-aware. It just took off and did these things, and we didn't control it, and it was a war, and it killed, 2 billion humans or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think we should think about this possibility, but the reason I'm not as worried as phenotypic revolutions is this AI cannot be more evil than the human who programmed it.
Exactly.
In other words, you will get the maximum evil that you have in human societies, but
there's some pretty evil individuals, by the way, Jeff. So, you know, would they get their hands on it? No, I mean, again, I'm not talking about the Google people now, these insane, like, liberal progressives as well, these San Francisco, Silicon Valley types, and, you know, tied in with these multimillionaires and the bankers and stuff, right? I mean, this we got to talk about that stuff.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't want to seem like I'm calling for forgetting about this, but it's still nukeable. It's still fightable against, and we still have our defenses up against. So I say, let's keep our defenses up against that kind of thing. Yes, it will happen, most likely. But once you've seen the viciousness of a revolutionary phenotype, this looks like kid's play.
Yeah.
Because the revolutionary phenotype tempts you. You know this quote in the Bible, I don't remember the exact words, but it's like the devil presents itself in form that is attractive. It's exactly how the revolutionary phenotype does. It first grants you gifts. Your babies will not have Alzheimer's. Your babies will not have Parkinson's. They will be more clever. They will be more beautiful.
And it will.
And it will make us better for many years. And so there will be no reason for you not to trust this AI. It's literally going to be better at every step until the death of humanity. It will improve humanity until it gets rid of it.
Trying to pull up an article here real quick in terms of the stock market, actually. This is an interesting thing, too. I think, JF, that the way that this thing, whatever it is, this sentient being, whether it's a single mind, whether it's many different ones, maybe there even will be with different companies develop different kinds, and they will end up competing with each other or something. Who knows, right? But the fact is that there's already aspects in our daily life that is controlled to a certain degree by a type of an artificial intelligence. For example, take the stock market, right? All these microtransactions and stuff like that has come up. Here's a story out of the Wall Street Journal, how Amazon is taking over the stock market too, and has developed this AI system which is doing these microtransactions. Much on the stock market already actually is so fast that humans cannot keep up, and much of it is handed over to an artificial intelligence. And even the Animatrix kind of describes this a bit, that the industry of humans will be run eventually by AIs to be able to be competitive even on the global market, right? New product developments, how do you invest, how do you make companies make more money and stuff like that. So what I think, and then we can extend this to, like, let's say the defense systems that we have out there, where an AI will need to look and calculate at surveillance footage and feeds and have its sensors out there to be able to assess enemies and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's already a kind of a back door that the AI has in our society and in our world, in the human sphere, because we want to utilize that to be better already, JF. And so it's just a matter of time before that switch, where it has infiltrated enough of our systems and industries for it to just kind of flip one day or something.
Absolutely. And that's a worry that we can have before the time scale of phenotypic revolution. We have a big issue on our end. We create machines that are so powerful that there's literally no reasons for humans to be intelligent anymore. And we're currently driving the IQ of this planet down for the next hundreds of years. It's going down, 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 down. We might very well throw ourselves back into chimpanzee level intelligence if we continue that way, because I have a smartphone that can handle my maps, my GPS. I don't even need to remember where the grocery store is. I just have to follow the arrow, and even it will take care of other needs of my life, such as the need to know how much time I will spend there, how much time I will spend here. All of our communications are getting reduced to the minimum through text. And so we are evolving away from what made humans great. The humans in 500 years from now, if you were to raise them separately and not teach them human culture, they may be unable to come up with inventions of the kind that we did. And so that is a worry. We will be lowering the IQ of people with all of this technology that does everything for us, because there is no more evolutionary pressure for maintaining high intelligence. This would happen in two ways. First, a reduction of the intelligence of people in Western civilization who have access to these technologies, but also their replacement by incoming migrant populations. And ultimately, the lowest IQs will win, because they will have smaller brains, they will be more efficient, and they won't spend their day thinking about prime numbers or stuff like this. They will be better humans. And in our society, a better human, unfortunately, is a human that is less creative and less intelligent.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point in terms of how IQ overall is driven down. And of course, this is done with the aid of technology, right? As we stop using our brains for calculations and thinking or trying to recall historical events, we have our phone and we just pull it up, right? I mean, and that's already an augmentation of the human species of sorts. I mean, I know that you can go so far back and say that eyeglasses is a kind of a form of augmentation too. It's a kind of way of using technology to alter the human body. But ultimately, I mean, that's fine to a certain degree. Like, you know, you have a phone, you can look something up or whatever. I know we're not going to be able to stop that. I know we're not going to be able to do that. But there's also a difference of, like, us implanting it, right, of taking it beneath our skin, inside of our skin, and allowing it into our physical bodies, right, of be that microchips in the head. And, of course, there's hundreds of companies studying this, right? This is one of the things that Musk's talk about, for example. How do we increase the output from human, right? It's very slow right now. If we're going to interact with an AI, for example, we can take in a lot of information quick, like visually, we can see and we can read and all that kind of stuff. But the only thing we have right now is basically just typing on a keyboard and clicking with the mouse, and that's it. And it's super slow. And so even Musk is developing, I forget what he called it now, the company, but some kind of interface there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been working on this interface myself at Duke University when I was a biological researcher. We were implanting electrodes in monkey brains to read their mind, literally, to try to guess what they were thinking ahead of time, try to see if they had strategic interaction when they were interacting with complex players. That was a 5 years of my life. This technology will emerge. It will become available. It's getting better and better in terms of bandwidth. As you say, and as Musk says, it's all about bandwidth. So our fingers, they provide a certain bandwidth. We cannot put a certain quantity of things to the computer. Maybe someday the neural interface will be quicker and safer, or at least just as safe. And that day, people might start equipping themselves with it.
Yeah, it's fascinating in one end, and then it's scary on another end in terms of, you know, how, because people have questioned what's going to happen also if people do get a chip, you know, in the brain or something, some kind of interface, and is it just going to go one way in terms of how, yeah, you can give the computer orders and you can talk to it and stuff, but what would be the preventable thing that it can also feed back into you and you know, connect to you in a way? There's also, of course, a lot of problems with this, health problems and stuff that has arisen, which are things that they have to solve. You know, majority of the mice, for example, that they did studies on implanting microchips and RFID tags and stuff like that, they develop cancer. They have to go on a lifetime of steroids to be able to prevent your body from pushing out the electronics and the circuitry. At the same time, we know, JF, that they're working on organic technology, right? It's actually, it's made with genes. It's like your body wouldn't be able to determine the difference. It couldn't actually push it out and stuff like that. So there's many different avenues that they're going to try to make to basically turn us into these drones, into these cyborgs, into these half machine, half computer kind of creatures. And it's just, I don't know, it's just, I hope that they don't get there. I think that they're going to have so many problems. It's not going to stop them, mind you, obviously. But there's going to be so many unseen and unforeseen consequences of them trying to improve it. And so I'm doubtful that they actually will reach it or get there. Maybe with an AI that could help us or give us the clue that could figure these things out effectively, maybe that's when we would like pass over that threshold and say, okay, there's ways around it. We can't edit genes. We can't insert these things into the human body. But how do you view that in terms of like the problems also that's going to come in the wake of this? As you said, okay, we'll try to solve Alzheimer's. We'll connect everybody to the super brain so we can have instant access to everything and all information that we want. But then there's other problems that's going to come in the wake of that, as we've seen with our technology already.
Absolutely. So the neural interface is becoming bilateral. So at this point, there are researchers with monkey, rats, who are inserting chips, and they are sending bilateral signals. That is, they record the activity of the brain, and they also send activity into the brain that the animal can detect. The sending to the brain is about 1 bit or two per many seconds. And so it's a very slow sending signal right now, but I have no doubt that every year it's going to increase and improve. On the medical issue, yes, the frontier of making these neural interface practical and safe will be extremely hard to pass. The thing is, once it's passed, then it's all a matter of ethics and of whether people want to do it or not. And I can think of a future in which we will solve all of these issues. The fact that there can be infection, the fact that it's still a brain surgery, we're still inserting something into the brain. Maybe people will not at first want to do it until they have severe issues, such as people who are paralyzed of the four limbs. We can give them control of a robot. Morally, I don't like this line of research, and that's partly why I've been giving up academia. I don't want to develop these technologies. I don't want to participate to their development. They are eventually dangerous. But the fact is, you describe a world in which people will have their mind controlled by some central intelligence. The fact is, we're already there. We're doing it with mouse, keyboard, and screens. Just look at the masses of leftists calling for censorship, coordinating themselves for flagging channels like this one. There is a moral effort to quash moral diversity and biodiversity on this planet. And the effectiveness with which it is being deployed, even in this low bandwidth interface that a keyboard is, tells me that the future is not very bright for this planet. Moral coordination, mob phenomena is already driving events on an everyday basis in the news, on the internet. It's just going to get worse as people get more connected. They will be fighting more against moral diversity. And moral diversity is what saves nations. It's what happens when a bunch of people are wrong, but there's still a 10% of the population that says, no, exactly. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
And if we abolish this, we are headed toward a 1984-style control of society, which, as far as I'm concerned, we're already in.
Definitely. And on one hand, of course, they will use this as the solvent, the fix to this division and to these issues that we have and to the increased polarization and I've heard people saying this. They talk about the global brain, you know, these documentaries running on National Geographic and History Channel and all that stuff. And they were talking about how, well, imagine you could tap into anyone and how they feel and you could understand people better and stuff like that. And what's crazy, though, is, you know, look at the internet. It was supposed to be this thing where we could connect with more people. We could get exposed to viewpoints from a point of view that we never thought about, things that you could learn and people could connecting in different parts of the world and stuff. But has it really become that? No, it hasn't. It's become these small bubbles of echo chambers. And now they're, of course, fighting with each other and flagging content that they don't like. They've become less prone to listen to other people. That's what's so amazing. So the polarization has actually, to a certain degree, been driven by the technology. So to go go in the same direction to fix the problem is obviously insanity. But that's what is going to be offered. This thing, if we all think the same, if we all just homogenize the human brain and have, as you say, one morality, one phenotype, one genetic makeup, a singular kind of human that thinks in a singular way, that is going to be the salvation for humanity. That's how it's going to be sold as, I think.
Absolutely. Diversity is important, and we're abolishing it once we... There's no diversity in the sterile worker ant colony. You know, the sterile workers are all the same. The queen owns the diversity and controls it. And in fact, even if there are different types of worker, it's the queen that decides the amount of diversity that will be right for her. This is what will happen with an AI. You may decide to produce different types of human, a very good grocery store manager, a very good computer analyst, a very good public personality, and bang, that's all we need. And diversity, what leads to diversity? It is the state of reproduction in humans. It is sexual selection. It is mutations. And it is the fact that we are individuals carrying our genes. And if we didn't carry our genes, there would be no reason for DNA to try to produce. Because when we have people who suffer from mental disorders or people who vary across the scale of whatever psychological measure you want to consider, that is due to a natural phenomenon. It's the genes trying different things so that they can find the solution. If we don't have the normal evolution of humans, which is humans carrying their own genes and not letting anyone else decide of their genes, we won't have the diversity that we have. And this diversity is what allowed us to escalate. The reason there are very intelligent nations that have produced great stuff, that have coordinated together, this was all due to this diversity that was driving, that was leading some people to be great at quantum physics, some others to be great at making bread.
Absolutely. It's like the same thing. We're going to take a break here just in a little bit. I want to talk more about the ETA on the book too, but one quick note on that and comment. It's kind of like what they've done with crops, right? That they have, you know, like the Monsantos, the Syngentas and stuff like that. They have homogenized the crop. They have terminator seed technology. In other words, kind of a dead genetic carrier. It's very limited in its genetic diversity. And this, of course, have shown in some instances to lead to bigger crop yields because it can, you know, it's adapted to the environment. It's a hyper efficient in that way. But as soon as some of those variables begin to change, like it's a year a little bit hotter, it's a little bit more rain or whatever, the whole thing collapses and there's no genetic diversity within it. There's no replication of the seeds, and it basically leads to a mass die-off of the entire field, if you will. And something similar could happen with humanity here, that the diversity that we talk about is, of course, not mixing out the diversity. It's preserving the diversity. It's like, think of it in terms of the watering collar box or something like that, right? It's actually the separation of them that is giving you the ability to paint different colors on a sheet, right? When you mix and blend everything, it's just a gray-brown goo, and it's just like there's nothing in it. And to a certain extent, that would happen the same thing with humanity, right? That we need the differences. We need people to think outside of the box and think different temperaments, different physical traits, and all these things. And so right now we're at this cusp, JF, where we have a global elite that want to exterminate these differences. They're targeting, of course, the white Europeans primarily at this point, I would say. But I don't think that they will settle for that. If they get over that hurdle, as I see it, they're going to turn to the next one and to the next one until there's a homogenized humanity. And it's going to be driven by AI. And maybe some of these people are already, like, have been given the instructions by this thing. Maybe there's, plans in effect. I mean, who knows? But it's bizarre. It's so strange that, like, they don't see this, JF.
Absolutely. Biodiversity is an insurance policy. And the conformity that we are enslaving ourselves to is the equivalent of not paying your insurance policy for a few months.
Let's talk about the book here a little bit. We're going to take a break and then return shortly. And I want to get into specifically, JF, about, you know, basically what do we do? Is there any way to stop this? What are the effects? How is this going to show up? How are we going to know when these things actually start to happen and what some of the warning signals for this is to continue the conversation on that? But so the book is written, you said, you've handed over to the proofreaders or editors or something like that. What's the ETA on the book now?
Absolutely. I'm trying to get it available for purchase before Christmas, and it's currently in the end of the last round of review, so it's a proofread, but the book is complete. The theory is satisfying to me. It is as big as I envisioned it maybe 7 years ago when I started thinking about these concepts, and I'm particularly satisfied at chapter 4, which provides a full answer to why mimetics is wrong, why we've been wrong in thinking of human culture as a replicator. So it finally addresses this question, which has led to the development of an entire field of academia, which has been misthinking this question for decades now.
All right, folks, we're going to take just a short little break here, and then we'll be back shortly with JF. We're going to continue in the member section, that second part of this interview, so stay tuned. Thank you so much for the first segment here, JF. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, there we go. Thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. I hope you have some new things to think about. If you haven't followed some of our older shows that we've done on AI, on simulations, on development of robot technology and cyborgs and all that kind of stuff, definitely check out the archives at redicemembers.com. Of course, you're watching the second part on redicemembers.com. Thank you for being a member, by the way. Can't do this without you. But definitely check some of those shows out. We have quite a few of them in the archives. A lot of good stuff there throughout the years. A lot of different topics in the archives that are not only pertaining to pro-European topics and the survival of European man, which of course we see as one of the most urgent situations that we're faced with in order to even get to a point where we can successfully combat the kind of issues that we spoke today with JF, and us being able to be in a position where we can kind of have that overarching responsibility, if you will, for the development of these things. So these are big questions. These are important questions, and I hope you spread the awareness of them. And also, of course, spread the awareness of our show to your friends, to your family. Make sure that we get out there and continue to grow in the wake of shadow banning, in the wake of censoring and all this kind of stuff that's going on right now. So I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Don't be too black-pilled. This is not meant to bring you down. It's not meant to destroy your outlook on life. We will continue, and we're going to continue to fight no matter what. We're never going to lay down, roll over, and give up. That's not the point of shows like this. It's to give you the awareness that you need to start thinking about these big questions, start doing something about it, and maybe even start working against them in some way or another, or thinking about different avenues. We need, as JF said, a lot of different avenues that people out there explore. Maybe there's paths that some of you guys out there will take that one day will be the shields and the swords that we are going to need in this fight. So that's how it works, and that's how it operates, and that's, of course, why we want to give you guys as much information about these things as possible, the big existential questions. So guys, make sure you stay tuned. A lot of good shows coming up, a lot of interesting guests coming on the show as well. So we'll be back shortly with much more. Until then, take care, stay safe, and keep fighting, and we'll talk to you soon.